If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for you.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I made a life change. I joined a co-working space. Have I talked about this?
No. Well, I think you were going to, but how are you liking it?
I honestly, like, it's been so helpful to my productivity that I'm, like, genuinely mad at myself for not having done this before. Because I'm like, where would I be on certain projects if I had been carving out, I am not a coffee shop writer and having a TV and a fridge and Riz in my home makes it very hard to get, like, serious writing work done here. I'm loving it. The only thing I wish is that everybody would have to, like, be like, here's what I do for work. This is what I do. That's why I'm here. Because, like, I'm just, like, dying to – everybody's got kind of different computer setups that they bring and, like, come for different periods of time. And I'm just like, oh, can't we all just tell each other what we're up to?
See, this is how WeWork gets invented. Because, like, that's basically co-working with – you do have, like, that little communal space where you get cold brew. And I'm assuming that you'd be like, so what do you do?
Yeah. And the other thing is they have coffee, but only – they have hot coffee and tea. There is no iced coffee. And as a – year-round iced coffee drinker. I'm just like, when will it get the same respect that hot coffee does and the same availability and access? That's what I really need. But other than that, it's really been amazing, and I've gotten so much done.
I'm
like plowing through my book, which has been really a long struggle to get done. So
I'm feeling
great. So if you're somebody out there debating joining a co-working space and you can afford it, I highly suggest doing it. Just do it.
I also feel like sinking money into it might be motivating. You know what I mean?
It's the same. It's like kind of like the gym membership thing of like, I'm already paying for it. Also, so one opened up like 6 months ago, two blocks from my apartment. So it's like I just go for like 2.5 hours a day of like dedicated, like just get on and write for 2 hours. And like then if you do nothing else for the rest of the day, like you've accomplished more than you did in the last six
Absolutely,
months.
Absolutely, yeah. Spend eight hours kicking your own ass about not writing.
Yeah, just like kind of like half watching TV, half Windexing, and then like writing one sentence that you end up deleting.
Ah, yes.
Ah, writing. How are you?
I'm also writing. It's going okay. I wish I had something more exciting. I'm sorry.
You know what? It's a doldrums time of year. There's not a ton happening. And
I did want to say, did you see the Kristen Stewart Rolling Stone cover?
I did.
America needed
She's so hot.
So it's hot. Just, and it like, is, like, I feel like, you see these like conservatives freaking out. It's like, well, one of the arguments is like, can you believe Kristen Stewart used to be so hot? Now she looks like this. It's like, anyone could see she's still hot. Like
she's still very hot. Arguably hotter now than she's ever been.
And there is something, too, where it's like the existence of any kind of queer beauty makes them so – it's like they want it because they want to control you. And they want access to your queer beauty but also force you to be traditionally feminine in this case.
Right.
And also, I don't know, it's like living in L.A., it's like hasn't every queer person been at a bar and be like, is that a lesbian or a gay guy? Are we in a place where it's like, how dare she have a mullet? And where it's like, she dare. Like, it's 2024. Yeah. Like, it's not going to work. You're not going to convince people she's not hot. And that's frankly the what we have and the queer community is. You can't pretend that these people aren't hot. You could say what you want to do, but normal people could use their own eyes and be like.
Yeah, be like, that is hot. I'm looking at someone who is hot.
Yeah. Guys, it's us, Hallie.
And Allison.
For the future. And we're here to tell you about a live show we're about to do. It's Sunday, March 24th.
It's at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, as normal.
And the movie we're doing is Imaginary.
Ooh! Ooh.
So please join us. You can get your ticket at moment.co/ruined. As always, we're going to have a drinking game.
Chat up and running. We'll have our old merch.
You better believe we have our old merch, baby.
We don't have new merch.
We never not have our old merch.
We are working on it, but we'll have a new movie, Imaginary, and all of the fun that we normally have at our live shows. So get those tickets at moment.co/ruined. If you're a top-tier Patreon member, you will get your tickets day of in your email, and that is it.
Thank you, guys.
We have to go back to the future.
Bye.
We love you. Bye.
our movie this week. It's, of course, March Madness.
March Madness.
And this movie is, I honestly got forgot. I couldn't believe we hadn't done this movie, but I also, we just recorded Don't Look Now, and I also couldn't believe we hadn't done that. So yeah. This is 2019.
It's so funny. Okay, my dad keeps being like, how are you guys going to keep doing this podcast? Aren't you going to run out of movies? I was like, we haven't done like a lot of movies. Like there is no end to the material that this podcast has access to. So I feel like it's just so funny. He's like, didn't you do them all? I'm like, no.
I was thinking like this podcast will only end when one of us has such a extreme life change that we won't be able to do it. Like that's the only way.
Yeah.
And I want that to happen in a good way. I don't want to be like one of us meets their untimely demise, but rather like,
no,
you know what I mean? Like you end up on Off-Broadway. Yeah. I meet my demise. You know, like there are a lot of different options that we could be revisiting.
Yes.
But that movie is Saint Maud. It is a 2019. Now this is something where it's like, it is a psychological program, but it is definitely not a thriller. This is a horror movie.
Oh no, I got that.
Okay. And it was written and directed. It was the feature directorial debut of Rose Glass, who her new, lesbian movie, or I guess queer movie, I don't know if they're lesbians, Love Lies Bleeding premiered at Sundance and got all this buzz because it is Kristen Stewart in a love affair with this bodybuilder played by Katie O'Brien. And so that was sort of promoting that while that was sort of in the ether.
Oh, okay. I was wondering why she was on the cover of Rolling Stone. Yes. So that makes sense. I mean, aside from like, she looks great.
Yeah. Just check it in. She looks fucking great.
Honestly, give her one a year.
Yeah, fine with me. Yes. It's coming out. Let's see. That movie's coming out. It's A24. It's coming out March 8th. Nice. So if Love Lies Bleeding is anywhere as good as Saint Maud, we should all run out and get it. Shout out to Rose Glass because I love Saint Maud. I think this is a phenomenal film.
Great.
We always like to have Allison watch the trailer. Allison, what are your thoughts after watching the Saint Maud trailer?
Mm-mm. This also very much goes in my bucket of religion is scary and always will be.
Because it can compel
somebody to do the things that the character in this movie is doing. I will say like the most, there's a lot of like chilling moments, but like her putting the needles in the image of a Virgin Mary, maybe?
Yes, yeah.
And then putting it in her shoe to walk around. I mean, I know that's like connected to a thing in Catholicism, I assume.
Yeah.
Of like self-flagellation, but like when she puts her foot in, like I don't want to step on a Lego, like let alone like
the foot. Yes.
Ugh, it's just like Riz has a bunch of toys, obviously, and some of them have like a little plastic piece on them. And like every once in a while, like I'll like step on one of those and I'm like, oh my God, I should lie down. Like the idea of like choosing to harm yourself in that way with such a violent looking device that really stopped me in my tracks.
I'm so glad that you felt that way because this movie is full of those kinds of images.
Cool.
We always like to take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of Catholicism?
Very.
Yeah.
Very. It is like, well, I think it's also like the most beautiful religion in terms of just like, I love gold too. Like, you know, it's like gold and red, and like there's a richness to Catholicism that is so like, you know, I studied so much of it as an English major and like so much of the work that we like talked about when I was a college student. And like, I do love all the lore, but like, I do find the pain infliction element and the like the deprivation element of Catholicism and the burning in hell for eternity stuff to be just really fucking awful.
Yeah, it's something where I think, I don't know, I think of like 80s and 90s stuff. I feel like there was more conversation about Catholicism. And now it's like, well, we have like evangelicals and like Mormons. Yeah. Like there is more of like a Christian pantheon. Unfortunately, there's a lot of similarities between all these religions, which is, of course, punishment, restriction, conformity, normalcy, purity. And of course, what happens when any of those things are stumbled upon by someone who genuinely believes they're true. That's the thing is like,
that's
you just hope that someone, like the people who genuinely believe like all of Catholicism is true, that's tough. You know, as someone raised Catholic, you got to give yourself a little bit room not to, you know, some stuff you got to let slide or else you're going to go completely insane, which of course is what this movie is about. Mm. But yeah, I think that this movie really felt like an indictment of Catholicism, but more specifically an indictment of any restrictive like thought process that forces you to like remove impurity, to treat the self or to treat life as something other than just going about your day, go to the store. You know, it's like, oh, everything has to be an indictment. Everything has to be about being punished if you do it wrong. And well, we'll get into it because there's plenty of that in this film. Mm-hmm. Would you like to guess the twist in Saint Maud before we get started, Allison?
Guess the twist.
I'm going to guess that maybe the woman she's taking care of, like, I can't quite square what's happening from the trailer, but it seems like she's taking care of a woman who maybe is her mother, maybe is just a lady. I'm going to guess that she thought she was Catholic all along, but finds out that she is not.
Okay, great.
And, like, all of this has been misdirected.
Okay. Fabulous. Let us get started ruining Saint Maud. We open on, of course, it's Maud. She is wearing nursing scrubs. She is crouched in the corner of a darkened hospital room. Her arms and face are smeared with blood. And as we follow her sort of like shaken gaze, we see a dead, bloody body on a gurney. And the body's long hair is matted and dripping blood onto the floor. And in this moment of true horror, Maud looks up, and into the corner of the ceiling ambles a cockroach. And we see Maud look at it, and from the jump, Maud's staring at it like, of course, she's seeing God.
Okay.
We then cut to the surface of a pot of tomato soup bubbling. And again, I was like, I just love a director who really enjoys directing.
Yes.
Like, to just choose, like, it's like, you're going to get it, like... I'm introducing like a viscous red fluid, but it's domestic, but I'm still conjuring blood. It's just, it was so good. We see Maud living in her very grim dump of a one bedroom studio apartment. Mm-hmm. So she's got a little bed, a little table with two chairs, and a kitchenette. And of course, on one end on her dresser, she has like a full Catholic shrine. So we got rosaries, we got crosses, we've got saint cards.
All you the know, ladies.
Yeah. Exactly. And she sits down to pray before she eats, and she says, asked God, and we hear her in voiceover, sort of talking to God throughout the film, to please help her, please help me at my next posting, even though my stomach hurts and I'm on my period, but if you could just show me what I'm supposed to be doing. And she says,
forgive me my impatience, but I hope you will reveal your plan for me soon. I can't shake the feeling that you must have saved me for something greater than this. That I'm complaining or anything.
We see Maud, she is in a small English seaside town, and she trundles her little rolling suitcase down the main thoroughfare past like a big arcade that says Coney Island. There's like a little miniature Coney Island. There's like a Ferris wheel and like a strip of like restaurants and bars that clearly like in this town, this is the place. Everyone's going on here. We see her mount what must be hundreds of steps to this gorgeous old house on a bluff overlooking the beach. And Maud gets to the door, and the current nurse is leaving, and she can't wait to get out of there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And Maud is a hospice nurse for a woman named Amanda. And we see the exiting nurse gives her the rundown, like, Amanda's on a regimen of shots, so you will have to give her a shot every day for 12 days. Her friend is coming over tomorrow. Like, you don't have to worry about it, but like, she will kind of like get loose. And third of all, try to keep her off a sauce because Amanda has been drinking through it. But also, it's like, you're in hospice. I'm just like, I mean, don't know. I get it, but like, come on.
Just let her do what she needs to do.
Yeah. And Ma says, how is she? And the other nurse pauses and says, a bit of a cunt. And then basically runs out with her rolly suitcase.
I love that.
So basically, Maud is going to be living with this woman. So she does, she kept her one bedroom, okay. but then she lives in the house because she's 24/7. And I don't know, I could be like, is this a British thing where she's not just a care, she's not a nurse. She's not just a nurse. She's also preparing food. You know what I mean? She's doing like-
Oh, so it's like a full caretaker.
Full caretaker.
I don't think that's just a, I think that there are people who do that.
Yeah. And I think Amanda, we found out, is rich. So I think we're to think like, okay, you're calling some service where it's like, yeah, she is on call. She does like physical therapy with Amanda. She bathes her, you know, she's more of a 24 hour type of a gal.
Yeah.
And we see Maude put up a crucifix in her room where she sleeps before going to see Amanda. We find out she's Amanda Cole. She's 49 years old and she has stage 4 lymphoma of the spinal cord. And as Maude tells God in her voiceover, I dare say you'll be seeing this one soon. We see Maude cooking and doing shopping for Amanda and brings Amanda her pills. And we hear Maude tell God, I looked her up. She's a choreographer, a little bit of a minor celebrity in her day. And I have so little patience for artistic types. She brings Amanda her shot, and Amanda is clearly in perma-bitch mode, and that's both implied that, like, that's her personality, and also, who wouldn't be?
I mean, I will be an asshole at the end of my life if I'm aware that it's happening.
Yeah, so she's, like, sighing and rolling her eyes, and she's constantly smoking, and she always has, like, a silk turban around her head. Yes. Like, she always looks great.
Yes. Yes.
And is clearly enjoying herself. It lives in this gorgeous house that, like, the implication is that she grew up there and now has come back, like, you know, for these last months. And that night, we see Maude get in her bed and curl up into the fetal position. The next day, we see Amanda. She helps Amanda do her stretches. And she sort of, like, has Amanda's leg over her shoulder, then leans towards Amanda. And when they're face-to-face, Maude's saint necklace slips out of her shirt and kind of dangles in Amanda's face. Mm. And Amanda kind of taps and says, who's your saint? And Maude tells her it's Mary Magdalene. And she's like, I didn't know they made her saint medal. She's like, well, I ordered it online. And Amanda looks at Maude and says, you're prettier than last girl. And of course, Maude is like, I don't believe in that, but thank you. You know, already sort of being like, well, someone's being nice to me. I don't hate this.
Yes.
Later, she's looking through Amanda's house. Amanda's written dance books, The Anatomy of Dance, The Body is a Stage. She also finds, like, framed posters of, like, her dance shows, and, like, a photo of her, a drawing of what is obviously Amanda, like, on her back, her blonde hair spilling down, sort of like this incredible glamorous metropolitan life this woman had. And now they're meeting here in this town at the end of Amanda's life. And that night, Amanda has Maude help her put on her wig and get all dolled up for her friend to come over. And Maude gets out of the house and goes into town. And we see her give change to a man who's credited as Homeless Pat, who is asking for money outside the arcade, and she gives him money, and then she says, may God keep you and never waste your pain. And then she storms away, and he kind of laughs, and he's like, thank you for the change. But, like, every interaction is like that. She can't have, like, a normal interaction. It has to be mediated through religion and through the concept of, like, what God would approve of, right?
Yeah.
Later, she's eating French fries in this, like, dinky little mirrored cafe, and she says to God, How could someone like Amanda end up in this podunk town? She must hate it more than I do. So she's already, like, forming this relationship with Amanda in her head, right? Mm-hmm. She gets a call, and unfortunately, she finds out that Amanda is wasted, and her friend Richard called to be like, hey, I'm headed out. I just want to make sure that you're checking on her because I think that she's going to fucking barf, you know?
Yeah.
And Richard tells Amanda, like, honestly, honey, you should maybe, pull back a little bit. Things are getting a little Norma Desmond around here. And Amanda's like, get out of my house. And of course, vomits as Maude tries to go help her. She puts Amanda to bed and gets her toast and water and scrubs the carpet while Amanda talks about sort of her youth with Richard. She's like, oh, Richard would always try to fuck me when I was young, you know, but we're still friends. And Amanda asks Maude to stay with her in her room and starts asking about Maude's life, which of course nobody does because Maude doesn't talk to anyone or seemingly have any friends. And she tells Amanda that she used to work at St. Afra's Hospital before this gig, and she has been a private carer for around a year. And she says, well, you know, I was interested in this, and plus it's what God wanted. When he came to me, then everything changed.
Okay.
And Amanda's already like, He says, well, does he talk to you?
Most of the time, it's just like he's physically in me or around me. It's like a shiver, or sometimes it's like a pulsing.
But sometimes I do hear his voice. And Amanda starts opening up and says, you know, since I moved back here, I keep imagining like the last moment. Because like, what's that moment going to be? And then what happens after that? Mm-hmm. And Maude, of course, she's like, my time to shine.
Maude, here we go. This is what I know.
Yeah. And she whispers to Amanda's ear, like, there is more. And it's not just after. He's always here now. And he will never let you fall. And Amanda smiles and she takes Maude's hand. And she's making fun of her. But she does say like in a nice way. She's like, you're my little savior. Mm. And Maude goes to bed. And when she goes in the hall, she sees the lights flicker. And as she goes to climb the stairs to her room, she smiles. And then she's clearly experiencing God, which is very in the style of, say, the ecstasy of St. Teresa, like she's having an orgasm.
Okay.
So she's like groaning and running her hands along the wall. She like grabs her chest and her head rears back in ecstasy. And she falls to the floor of the landing. And her mouth opens wide and she gasps. And then I don't know exactly if that means she has to punish herself, but we see her go in her room and sprinkle, like, they're either seeds or beans onto the carpet and kneel on them to pray to the crucifix. So she has to be harming herself while she prays, of course. And she tells God, I figured it out. Thank you so much for putting me on this mission. Caring for the decrepit has its dignity, of course, but saving someone's soul is so much more important. She's going to save Amanda's soul, Allison.
Okay.
We'll see her dump out all of Amanda's booze, and I'm like, that's not going to go over well.
Yeah, I wouldn't stand between someone and that. That's just me.
And unfortunately, I think this is the thing about religion is like, you can practice your religion, but that's not what religious people want to do. They want to practice it on us.
Exactly.
They want to practice their religion on other people. So now she's practicing it on Amanda, whether or not Amanda has any interest in it at all. At the sink, she's doing dishes, and she goes into the ecstasy again and gasps as she does. A woman knocks on the door. She's already mad that there's somebody there, and she's especially mad that it's a woman, right?
Yeah.
And this is woman Carol, gorgeous, kind of dykey looking woman, and it's like, oh, I'm here to see Amanda, and she's like, Amanda's not. It's really late. She's not expecting guests. It's like we talked online. She knows I'm coming. Don't worry about it. Maude is furious, but lets her in. And we see in the bathroom, Maude's nose starts bleeding. And she could hear Carol and Amanda laughing in the other room. Mm. In the morning, while counting out Amanda's pills, she sees Carol leaving and she's counting like a fistful of money. Maude makes soup and Amanda calls Maude in, like, let's have lunch together. And before she eats, Maude starts to pray. And Amanda pauses the TV and prays with her. And Maude says, bless Amanda's body, which has done many wonderful things, and bless her mind, which is shrouded in darkness right now. Mm. And we see Maude again go into sort of her ecstasy, and she starts gasping and shuddering. And Amanda says, oh, is he here? And Maude nods. And suddenly Amanda smiles, and she nods. She says, I feel it. I feel it too. And they sort of both lean back, and they start breathing heavily. And we see, like, in Maude's mind, the memory of her doing physical therapy on Amanda, like, touching Amanda's body. And while they're sitting there, Amanda reaches over and touches Maude's hand, and she gasps.
Yes, of course.
And again, she would never let herself have an actual orgasm, much like the ecstasy of St. Teresa. She's taking this manifestation of a physical and mental release as evidence of God.
Yes.
Now, if you would let yourself, again, enjoy any of this, you know, maybe you'd understand it differently, but...
Right.
God's in the room, Allison. That night, she helps Amanda get her wig on again, and Amanda gives Maude a book of William Blake poetry and signs it to my Savior, love from Amanda. So, of course, Maude is over the moon. She loves that she got a gift. And she reads in the kitchen when we see Carol come in again. And Carol comes down from Amanda's room. She's wearing a robe. She's obviously here down to clown. She's here to have a good time.
Yes.
And she's getting a bottle of cold champagne for both of them. And Maude is so fucking mad that this woman is in her house. And what she has decided is her house. Because Carol is obviously busting up this platonic lesbian love affair that she is carrying on in her mind that she'll never let herself indulge in. And Carol's like, why do you look so bad? Who cares? You know, I'm just here to have a good time. And she pops the bottle and champagne pours out. Of course, Maude has to get down and clean it up. Carol's like, don't worry about it. I'll get it. You don't have to do that. And they're sort of cleaning up the champagne. And we hear Amanda call to Carol, honey, come back to me. And so, of course, Carol goes back to Amanda, and we see Maude reading the William Blake book, just getting more and more angry.
Maude.
And we hear her reading the book in voiceover. She says, religious themes played a prominent role in Blake's career, namely organized religion, which he said was a distortion of a true spiritual life. Later, when Maude goes up to bed, the door to Amanda's room is open a crack. And so she starts spying on Amanda and Carol. And they're, like, drinking. They're both, like, this is, like, what my fantasy of, like, an adult lesbian sexual encounter is, which is you're both wearing, like, a like, $800 silk robe.
I mean.
You both look incredible.
Yes.
Right. You're drinking champagne. It is sort of just, like, in reality, you're just watching TV. But, like, this, the, you hope when you're dying, you get to have this kind of moment.
This is
right?
the kind of fantasy, fantastical version of, like, all of it.
And so, of course, Maude is furiously jealous. And we see Amanda and Carol kiss while they're drinking. And then Carol gets up and starts dancing for Amanda. Because Amanda, the implication is that Amanda is losing mobility pretty quickly. So we see her, like, sitting up. But I think we're dancing
is probably the extent of what she's able to do.
And also, it's like she was a dancer. So I think that's part of it is, like, Carol is dancing for her. But, of course, as Maude watches, like, we see Amanda's face fall, and she, like, pulls her robe over because she is dying, so she's obviously uncomfortable.
Of course.
In the morning, when Carol goes to leave, Maude corners her and says, I don't think you should see Amanda anymore. She has big things going on, and she needs to focus, and I don't think you can fit into that anymore. Carol.
I don't want to do any big things at the end of my life.
Right, it's like,
it's just going to be small, fun things until I'm gone.
Right. It's like, don't you want to have sex with some lady you met online? Isn't that like, isn't that the best case scenario?
Yes.
And Carol says, Riley, like, I don't think your patient's sex life is any of your business. And Maude says, I know you, says she gives you money when you come over. And Carol says, again, that is none of your business.
Yeah.
And Maude tells her, I see how you look at her. Is this a joke to you? Do you think you're too good for her? She is vulnerable. This is a life and death time for her. This is not a time to get worked about some silly girl who doesn't care about her. And Carol's like, I do care about her. And Maude says, not enough. Not as much as me, okay, of course.
Bitch.
So Carol goes to leave. And Maude says, where are you going? And Carol says, I'm leaving. I'm not going to argue with her. And Maude says, and it's like, man, Maude, you don't understand how any of this works. Maude says, okay, well, don't tell her I said any of this to you. You know, make something up. Carol, who's obviously furious and is obviously going to tell Amanda.
What? The first chance she gets.
Is going to text her as soon as she's out the door.
And be says, like, that crazy gal that you've got living in your house and taking care of you is a real bitch.
Yeah. She says, whatever you say, Maude. And she leaves, and Maude smiles, and we hear her telling God, I think that went well. Allison, I'm going to ask you this, and you can answer for whatever character you want. Allison, at this point in the movie, what would you do?
What would you do?
If I'm the other gal, I'm texting Amanda immediately. And being like, I don't know, you should fire her, but also, do you? If I'm Amanda and then find out that this is Maude's kind of vibe,
yes,
I might find somebody else to be in my home during this phase of my life.
I think
so. And if I'm Maude, I think there is no shaking her from thinking that she is doing what is right and this is important work for her and she must stay. If I'm me, though, I'm like, I'm in over my head here and I'm going to go back to my studio apartment and maybe figure out a new path.
Absolutely.
Ruined is brought to you by Factor. It is so hard to plan and prepare and eat healthy meals every single night of the week, but I'm super excited about Factor. You get every meal is fresh, never frozen, and is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. I mean, this is exactly what I need. It's spring. I want to do stuff. I want to stay fueled, but I don't want to waste any time preparing or shopping or doing any of the stuff that it is to feed yourself as an adult.
Absolutely, and I feel like we've all had the experience of like getting home and being like, oh my God, I can't cook an entire meal. So for me, Factor is a great option in terms of like having food there, like having food on hand. It's also me not wasting groceries. You know what I mean? You can imagine, you see what I'm like on the pod. You can imagine what my fridge looks like. In this way, I have prepared meals ready to go. They're healthy. They are waiting for me.
And it's great because you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. So like if you're going to be eating out a lot, you can do fewer. If you're like in a kind of a vegan mode, you can do vegan. And you can pause and reschedule deliveries all to just suit your lifestyle. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals.
Head to factormeals.com/ruined50 and use the code RUINED50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code RUINED50 at factormeals.com/ruined50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Maude, of course, is going to double down. We see her bring in a bottle of, ostensibly holy water. She makes crosses on the wall with it. And Maude is very pleased that she thinks that her Carol plan worked, because we hear her say, one whole day and her phone hasn't rung yet. So it's like, oh, great, you've successfully isolated a dying woman from somebody who she was
who
clearly
brought her
enjoying
joy.
A relationship. Yeah. And we see, but we see Maude bathing Amanda, and they are laughing like they're clearly like having a friendship. And Maude says, oh, God, she reminds me of myself in the first flushes of your love. We don't need anyone else. You know, again, she's being very controlling of Amanda.
Amanda says that to Maude, or Maude says that to?
Maude says that to God.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. That night, we see Maude walking along the beach near the main strip, and a woman calls to her and says, Katie! Katie! The woman catches up to Maude and hugs her and says, Katie, how are you doing? Allison, this is Joy, who worked at the hospital with Maude prior to her conversion. And apparently, her name then was Katie.
Okay.
And so she still works at Safe Afro, and she's like, oh my God, the hospital is still fucking insane. I mean, you know how slammed we were. And she says, well, how have you been doing? We kind of all assumed that you moved out of town since we hadn't seen you out. And Maude says, I'm a private carer now. And we see Joy's eyebrows go up and goes, oh, you're still in nursing. We're through. She says, it's a private agency. And Joy says, and they know what happened? Mm. Maude says, yes, of course I know. And then turns to go. And Joy, feeling bad, hands her number and says, call me if you want to get a drink sometime. Let's go out. It was really great to see you. Meanwhile, Maude continues to tend to Amanda and is watching her like a hawk, like micromanaging even a game of solitaire that Amanda's trying to play. And Amanda like sneaks a card in and she's like, you can't do that. And she's like, what are we talking? What do you mean?
Right.
Who cares?
Do what? Like,
it's yeah. So to kind of get her out of her hair, Amanda asks Maude for a cup of tea. Amanda's phone rings, and Maude can hear from the kitchen as Amanda answers and says, what? Wait, what? Why? And as soon as Maude comes back in with the tea, Amanda is totally shut down. Mm-hmm. And she says, I want to go to bed. Maude says, well, it's 5 p.m. She says, I can go to bed. I am allowed to do whatever I want. I'm going to bed. Of course, as self-punishment, instead of being like, wow, I really was acting very jealous and inappropriate with this client, Maude instead puts her hands on the stovetop and burns her hand as punishment, of course.
Of course.
In the morning, Amanda's still very icy. She's texting on her phone, presumably with Carol. She's like chuckling to herself, and Maude hates it because she's being iced out. Maude brings her breakfast tray, and Amanda says, could you go to town and get a bunch of stuff? And, of course, when Maude walks back, we could hear the bottles clinking. So it's like, you could dump out my booze, but you're just going to have to buy more. Because, Allison, we're having a rager.
Thank God. Amanda's, we need a raging party.
I know. Amanda invites all of her, like, fancy, presumably London art friends, like dance friends. And they're all cool.
I must be at that party.
I know. It's like a blowout bash. Everyone looks fabulous. Like, you know. Also, Amanda's now using a wheelchair full time. And instead of wearing her wig, which she had been putting on, she just wears her silk.
Just the turban.
The turban, right. So I think, again, like, she just wants to be comfortable. And when she looks at Maude, she's happy. And when Carol walks in, Carol's like, looks incredible in a blue sequin cocktail dress. Amanda literally screams, oh, yes! And like wheels over her. Of course, Maude hates this.
Yes.
But they're all kikiing and having a great time. And Maude is like in the kitchen, of course, fuming and just like working on the food. And Hillary, when an obvious lesbian, comes in to help her with the birthday cake. And Maude's like fumbling to light the candles. They bring the cake in into the darkened room. And everyone sings happy birthday as Amanda blows the candles out. Of course, Maude's perspective, she could see Amanda sort of coughing as she blows. And Hillary, we see asking Carol, well, how did you and Amanda meet? Amanda says, oh, we met online. And Hillary says, wow, you have a real menage a trois here, you know, indicating Maude. Mm. And of course, Maude's overhearing this. And Amanda says, you know, Maude doesn't like Carol. She told Carol that she doesn't like her. I can't tell if she's a bigot or if she's just jealous. Which
maybe
I think is
a little
like,
bit of both.
It is absolutely both in this situation.
Yeah.
But she's
that's
like,
religion.
She tried to scare Carol away. And Maude's in the room, just across the room, and Amanda says, "You were trying to save my soul, right, Maude?" And Maude, of course, is taken aback and furious. And Amanda says, "Well, so what is it? Am I indecent to you?" Also, Amanda is, at this point, very drunk.
Yeah.
And Amanda says, "Am I indecent to someone like you?" And Maude says, "No, you're lost." And everyone starts laughing. And one of our Amanda friends takes a napkin and puts it as a veil on Maude's head and ties it with a ribbon to make fun of her. And of course, she yanks it off. And Amanda, who then does feel bad, sort of reaches for Maude and says, "Please don't take anything I say seriously. I just wanted to loosen up. You're a beautiful young woman. You should have fun while you can. I didn't mean it, you know." But of course, Maude's not having it.
No, Maude doesn't want to have fun.
Maude doesn't want to have fun. She says, "I have more important things on my mind." And Amanda says, "Oh, of course. How could human frivolity compare with the Lord's warm, hard, pulsing?" And Maude slaps her across the face. She slaps Amanda so hard her nose starts bleeding. Needless to say, she has lost her position as Amanda's caretaker.
Well, that's not surprising, and she should have seen that coming.
Yeah, we see her at the hiring agency, and the woman in charge is like, "Yeah, so you've been sacked. You're lucky that she isn't pressing charges. You did assault a dying woman." And she also expressed some other concerns, so I want to check in with you, like, are you okay? So I appreciate at least Amanda was like, "I think maybe something's going on with her, and this was like an outburst based on something
other
she's unwell."
Building.
Yeah. And Maude, of course, she's not letting that. She's like, "I'm fine. Everything's totally fine." And so she goes back to her shitty little studio apartment with her saints pictures and her crucifix. Mm-hmm. And we see as a roach crawls along the wall, we see her hunched over in pain in bed. She just asks God, "All I can feel of you is the pain. You know, is it maybe I have cancer, ulcers, and appendicitis?" Which to me is like, as a Catholic, it's like, what, you're so removed from your emotional pain that you assume it has to be physical. It's like, no, you did something bad and you estranged
yourself
from
guilt.
Someone you like, and you feel guilty and you're lonely. But instead it's like, this must be God, you know? Mm-hmm. And he says, "If you're trying to teach me something, I can't see what it is." And that's sort of the thesis sentence of the movie. It's like, well, if you could look at this from the viewer's perspective, you could learn and not do this. But you don't have that ability.
No.
She goes down to the water, and we see her, she's really distraught. At one point, she's walking around with her hair wet, so I didn't know if she had, like, gone in the water and was walking home, you know, and, you know, she's there, she's really mad at God, she's, like, ranting, she's like, "I was alive, and I was open, and I am alone and unemployable," and she's mad, she's like, "Maybe you aren't as wise as I thought, maybe I wasn't paying enough attention," like, basically blaming God for this, you know?
Sure.
And at home, we see her, she has a big scab on her burned hand for where she put it on the stove, and she starts picking the scab off. We see her walking down near the water, and we see Amanda out with her caregiver. She never went out with Amanda. And Amanda let the caregiver take her down to the waterfront. Back in her room, Maude's there, and the crucifix falls off the wall onto her bed. And every time this kind of thing happens, like the lights flicker in the house, the crucifix falls, this is like her sign, a sign from God to go do something different.
Yeah, right? It's not that she lives in an old shitty apartment where stuff happens.
Yeah.
It's God talking to her and giving her information and a message.
Yeah. So, but this time she's going to get dolled up. She's going to go out. So she puts on like a going out top. She's got her arms out. Sort of a low V. She looks gorgeous. She does her makeup. And so again, she doesn't understand how to like make friendships or be with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's thinking, okay, I will go and like doll myself up and try to talk to somebody. Unfortunately, as someone who's ever tried to meet a good friend at a bar alone, it doesn't work every time.
No,
you know?
I wouldn't think.
So she's drinking a beer and trying to make eye contact with anybody in the bar. And she meets this young man's gaze and smiles at him. And later, seconds later, gives him a hand job sort of outside the telephones in the back, like outside the bathroom.
Okay, Maude.
And he comes in her hand, like they're both fully dressed. And he says, sorry. And then he and his friend leave. And I was like, and that's straight dating as far as I'm concerned.
That's pretty par for the course.
Yeah. She goes back to the bar and she tries, there's like two couples, like a four top, and poor Maude's like, haha, like trying to join them. And it's like, oh, because we've all been there.
Oh,
we're like,
God.
Oh, maybe these people will let me join them. And also, I love when people join. Like, I actually like when a stranger comes over. But when it doesn't work, it's so humiliating. Like, it's just
awful.
Like, I'm sorry, I thought we were all laughing, but we don't know me. You know, so she does what you do with that situation, which is get fucking wasted, right?
Yes.
And she calls Joy, we give her the number, she's wasted, and she fumbles that call too, and she's like, sorry, you're right, she can't even, like, express herself. At the end, she says, I apologize, I'm pretty stupid, okay, never mind. We see Ahmad go back to the bar. She keeps drinking. And when she looks down at her beer, it forms a whirlpool.
Yes.
And she leaps up and she runs into another table. When she looks at it, their beers are also whirlpooling as well. Mm-hmm. She turns and she like runs face first into a big, friendly looking guy with a beard. One of our best kind of guys, I think.
Yeah, great guy.
And he gestures at the beer that spilled over and says, "You owe me a drink." Cut to Ahmad and this guy fucking.
Okay.
But it's obviously—
Busy night.
It's okay.
Busy night.
Busy night. She's getting it done. I mean, yeah. She's not enjoying all of it. I think it's things
right,
like—
but it's happening.
We're watching her go through the motions of like enjoying herself, which as someone who thought they were straight for a long time, boy, have I been there, girl. And she's like on top of this guy, has her hands on his chest, and he like keeps trying to reach for her, but she's having sex with him. Like she's grinding on him, but it's kind of like he's neither here nor there, right?
Right.
Like he reaches up and she slaps mm-hmm. his hand away. And we cut between them fucking and then the patient we saw at the beginning. And we see Maude performing CPR on this person. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we cut to Maude on top of this guy. And then we see what happened to the patient at the beginning, which is Maude breaks her rib cage. And you don't really see this person. I took it to be an elderly woman. Shatters her rib cage. And we cut to the guy that she's having sex with, blood gutting out of his mouth. And she screams and leaps off of him. It's just a hallucination.
Okay.
The guy's fine, but she's, of course, having this
remembering
memory.
What?
Yeah. Yes. And apparently that's how she inadvertently killed this person. It was, I'm sure, traumatic. And she, like, he holds her. He's like, easy, easy. And then he turns her over and starts having sex with her. And she tells him no, but he rapes her anyways. Afterwards, he lights a cigarette. And he says, I remember you. You used to be out all the time. I think you and my mate Tommy had it off. Lovely little nursey. So, of course, Maude throws her clothes out and runs back to her place.
Mm, poor Maude.
I know. Maude can't catch a break, and it is mostly her fault, but also the world does suck. It's like Maude seeking for something and finding... Maude's sort of, I would say, an incel in a sense, where it's like, the mm-hmm. world is bad, but also you are taking... Like, you have no concept of your role in it. Like, you are letting it drive you insane because you can't see how your behavior is. Not to blame her for this incident. Like, this guy's a piece of shit. And... obviously, she was trying to prove something to have, like, a normal life or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we see her turn on the faucet, and the sink starts filling up, and she prays to God. She says, I changed, didn't I? I said I did everything you said I had to do. Like, please don't let me fall again. I'm begging you. And we see her hands start shaking, and she starts vomiting explosively. And she hears explosions outside, and she runs to the window and sees fireworks exploding in the sky.
Okay.
And she falls to the ground, and we see water pouring out of the sink. She's writhing and screaming and vomiting again. And we see the roach crawling on the ceiling of the hospital. And in her shitty studio apartment, Allison, Maude starts floating in the air. She levitates about 6 feet off the ground.
Sure.
And she opens her eyes and gasps, but this time it's with a smile. So at this point, I have to ask you, Allison— who will survive this movie?
Who will survive?
Poor Maude is not going to make it.
Yeah, I think we all know that that's where we're headed.
That's where we're going. I think it's possible that by the end, Amanda has passed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you might be dead on about that. What about Joy? What do you think about her old coworker?
The friend?
Mm-hmm.
I think she'll be alive. I feel like she'll find things that Maude has left behind and be the person who's like piecing together like, oh, things really went south here.
Okay, great. In the morning, Maude's got a new attitude. We see her cleaning up her apartment and tells God, revelation. And just in time, to think I almost fell so easily. And we see her bagging up her clothes. We see her burning some of her clothes in the sink. And she makes a, I don't know exactly how you pronounce it, but it's spelled S-P-U-G-N-A, a spoona, which of course is an interesting instrument of penance used by some Christians who practice mortification of the flesh. So basically it is a sponge. It's made of cork that you insert metal studs, nails, or spikes into, and that you put it in your shoe, or I guess you could kneel on it. You do whatever you want to do with it. You hurt yourself because humans, our brains are bad, and we think mm-hmm. that an all-loving God would want us to hurt ourselves to show our dedication to him.
Yes.
It's not good. Don't do this. And
don't
also,
do this.
I didn't know that was the name of it, but I think it's Spoona is how you pronounce it. She puts it in her shoe so she could always be walking on nails, much like, of course, the nails driven through Jesus Christ's body. And as a result, this is the mortification is like you are reenacting and committing yourself to and repenting for the death of Jesus Christ, you know. And so there's a lot of different kinds of self-flagellation. We don't have to go into it. But here she's put in her shoe and she's walking around and she's grimacing through the pain, but she's also smiling at her righteousness.
Ugh.
Unfortunately, Maude is still obsessed with Amanda, and we see her looking at Amanda's house. There's sort of like a viewfinder at the beach to look out over the shoreline, and she's looking at Amanda's house. And she starts Googling Amanda's career, video of her dancing. And we see Maude cutting up the William Blake book and put it on the wall. And she says, "Amanda, you called out to me. This was no small thing." And she repeats what she said at the beginning, "Never waste your pain." And she cuts out the part of the book where it says Amanda wrote, "My Savior," and puts it on the wall. Clearly, she's entering like a new cycle of obsession. Like she's back at it, right? She saw her Amanda and her new carer at the beach at one time. So she also starts stalking the caregiver.
Yeah.
And eventually, the caregiver takes a break and is getting lunch, is like eating lunch at a bench at the waterfront. And not knowing who Maude is, when Maude comes over, says, "Hey, do you mind if I join you?" Just starts chatting with her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Maude, of course, having been a caregiver before, is like, "Oh, you're wearing scrubs. Are you a nurse?" And she says, "Oh, you know, no, I work at for a private agency." And Maude's like, "Oh, everyone who works in the medical field is incredibly beautiful and intelligent. And I just think it's the most noble thing you could do with your life." The woman says, "Yeah, like I'm attending to this woman. She's in hospice right now. She's so amazing. We've really gotten really close. It's so precious that I get to have these relationships with people at the end of their lives, and I don't think she has much time." Of course, Maude is furious to hear this. That
she's
really
like, "That
getting
should
along.
Be me."
Yeah. And she turns to Maude. She says, "I'm sorry. I should have said this earlier. My name's Esther. What's yours?" And Maude just gets up and storms away, fuming.
Maude.
And Maude's, again, mad at God for all this. And she says, "What if you're smirking? What if you think I'm a clueless idiot like that stupid woman? Is that how Amanda saw me all along?" And that night, Maude lies in the dark. We see the roach crawl out of the sink and towards the shrine. Allison, when the roach approaches the shrine, the air ripples like like water.
Yeah.
So Maude gets up and approaches the shrine, and we hear a man's voice say in Welsh, the voice of God ostensibly, "My child, the hour draws near. Soon you will join the great embrace. You've known for some time that this world is just a game. Your life, childhood, mom and dad, you could feel that there was something more. You could feel there was something more, and all you yearned for was to touch it. I'm proud of how far you've come. I'm proud of you." And one of the William Blake cutouts falls to the floor and Maude picks it up. Again, another, every time this happens, like another vision, another sign from God. Meanwhile, it's just a piece of paper fell off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice of God, of course, we'll put in a clip here, says, take on this last test and then we'll be together truly.
Derbyn y prawf ola yma, ac fe fyddwn yn wir gyda'n gilydd.
And she says, "God, how will I know what to do?" And he says, "You've always known what to do." And Maude goes back to bed. In the morning, she strips her sheets and puts them on sort of as a shroud, you know, so like you see like a, you know, a saint or the Virgin Mary, and puts her big wooden rosary off the wall over her head. So again, she's making herself fully into like a penitent, or like she's making herself into a saint. The Saint Maude, of course. And we see her. This is like what I think is interesting about this movie, and what I think is interesting about, like, say, The Invitation, where it's like once you decide that you are in charge of a religion, then you really are allowed to go buck wild. For example, as a Catholic, you would never say fill the sink with water and then bless it yourself and then make your own holy water to put in a bottle.
No.
But Maude's off the chain now.
She's so deep in that it's like, yeah, that's part of it. Why not? You can do that.
And there is something, like, I know in Mormonism where they think that you could talk directly to God. And what an incredibly dangerous thing that is to talk to people, tell people. And I just have that Catholicism, like, priest, where it's like, well, we see where that always ends up. You could rationalize anything you think.
Great.
Right. You're like, well, what does God want? It's crazy. God wants the same thing I want. That's, wow, I guess I have to listen to him, you know? We also see there's a big vial of acetone in her apartment, which, again, not something you like to see.
You don't need that.
It's the morning, and suddenly there's a knock at the door, and a woman calls through. It's Joy. She has just stopped by to say hi, probably because last time she talked to Maude, she was drunk on the phone. Maude lets her in, and Joy's like, oh, wow, look at your shrine. Like, this is really cool. And she lights up a cigarette, and Maude is really out of it. So Maude keeps staring out the window, looking at Joy. And Joy says, hey, I just want to apologize for what I said. You're a great nurse. That what happened is not your fault. And I know that. And I want you to know that, too. So I'm sorry that I said it like that. But I just want to make sure that you know that. And she could tell that something's going on. So she says, what's going on with you, Katie? So again, it's like, this is the one person who really is trying to reach out to her. Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, I just want to also say, we should have been there for you when that happened. Because we saw you struggling before that happened. And everyone's like in their own little bubble. But we all knew in retrospect that you were in a bad place. And then that happened. Mm-hmm. And I think the ostensible thing is like she had some sort of break and then became converted, right?
Yes.
However, it's kind of falling on deaf ears at this point because Maude is looking out the window. And in the clouds, starts to see a whirl, like the beers in the bar, right?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
But Maude comes over to Joy and says, Joy, may the Lord bless and keep you. Don't worry about me. Back then, I was so lost, but I am transformed. And soon, everyone will see.
That's never a good sentence for someone to say.
Yeah, I would say the sentence to look out for is, soon everyone will see. Yeah, that's...
That's a tough one.
Let's talk about everyone get your places. The play's about, we're about to put on a play, and soon everyone will see it the second the curtain goes up.
Nope.
Other than that,
it is just not a great thing to hear.
Yeah, Houston, we have a problem for sure. And Joy obviously picks that up and says, okay, well, how about I'll come by later, you know, just to check in. Because it seems like maybe something's going on, you know. Yeah. And it's like, kudos to you, Joy, for trying to get involved. We see Maude grab her water bottle full of holy water. And when night falls, she walks into her saint outfit up the main road to Amanda's house. And we see Maude hiding in the bushes until Esther, the caregiver, leaves. And then she sneaks into the house. And of course, when she walks in, the electricity flickers again, which she takes as a sign.
Of course, God is talking to her and not just that the power grids are not just an incredibly old house. Reliable.
Yeah, exactly. She goes to Amanda's room. We see Amanda is asleep, and she now has an oxygen tank, and her she has no turban, so her hair is very sparse. So we see her bare head. And Maude comes up and touches Amanda on the face. And Amanda says, oh, it's you. I'm so sorry I was unkind to you. You made me think of things I didn't want to think about. And Maude says, the Lord forgives that which is said in anger. Don't worry, he knows what's in your heart. But Amanda is, she's too much of a crank. She's like, oh, right, the Lord. Okay.
Fine.
Yeah. Maude opens her bottle of holy water and takes some, makes a sign of a cross on Amanda's forehead, and she kind of slaps her hand away and says, snap out of it, honey. You know he isn't real, right? You must know that. Maude does not know that.
That is not something you say to somebody who is in Maude's state.
Yeah. She's going full Maude, bitch. She says, but you felt him too, remember? And it was like that time where they both sort of experienced it, and Amanda said, I could feel him. Amanda says, I didn't feel it. You have no idea how dull it is to be dying. Allison, she faked it. She faked her ecstasy and faked her experience with God. And Amanda tells Maude, I hate to be the one to break it to you, but nothing matters. And Maude just immediately starts breaking down crying.
Yeah.
And Amanda starts laughing and says, well, that was easy. And Amanda lunges forward and her face distorts into a demon's face. And she flips Maude across the room, cackling in this low demonic voice. And she tells Maude, take some responsibility. You came back here because you are alone. If you were a true believer, he would be enough. But it's clear now you are as weak as your faith. Unfortunately... that Maude grabs a pair of scissors off of a tray of like medical supplies and leaps onto Amanda and just starts stabbing her to death, screaming over and over again, blood spraying everywhere.
No.
Killing Amanda.
Yeah.
Maude leaves, and outside we see her spat with blood. She's moved by the spirit, like she's in ecstasy, and she's almost like flying through the night. Like she's like shuddering. She's grabbing, God is with her. Like she's mm-hmm. she's in ecstasy. She goes home, she cleans up, and she lays there as the clock ticks. And we see her get out a new, fresh pair of sheets. And when she turns behind her, she sees connected to her back a pair of glowing golden wings.
Oh, no.
Well, unfortunately, that's given her even more ideas. So we see Maude walking again in a bedsheet and across to the beach.
Oh, boy.
And above her, she sees the clouds swirling. And she's sort of singing hymns gently to herself. And she puts down the plastic bag she was carrying. And in the plastic bag, Allison, unfortunately, is the bottle of acetone. Mm. And there are some people, like, it's people like, it's like a cold, breezy English beach. So it's yes. not like beach people, but people are, like, walking their dog.
But everyone's, it's like a nice up. Place to go for a walk.
Exactly. And it's early morning. So there aren't a ton of people. But when she opens the acetone and starts dumping it on her head, obviously anyone walking by on the boardwalk or the beach starts screaming. And yeah. you can hear someone be like, someone stop her. Someone help her. Like, people are trying to run over to her. And Maude takes out a lighter. It sparks one up for the Lord, Allison. Mm-hmm. And when she opens her eyes, everyone on the beach is standing there, reverent, watching her. And she says in Welsh, glory to God. And then the flames ignite her, and everyone on the beach falls to their knees, seeing her as she is, Allison, a shining angel with beautiful glowing wings. And at the very end of the film, for one split second, we see reality. Maude consumed by fire, skin falling off, her mouth open as she howls in pain. And that's what being Catholic is. The end.
Whew. Wow.
What a good one.
That's a good one.
Ooh.
Boy.
What are some fatal mistakes you think may have been made in the movie Saint Maude, Allison?
Mistakes.
To experience a trauma like, you know, killing somebody as a nurse, and instead of processing it in a healthy way that includes dealing with your own interiority and therapy, just turning blindly to a religion feels like you're never going to have a good relationship with that religion, and therefore this is where that ends up.
Yeah, and I think there's, like, we have joy, like, as this person who was obviously concerned and did obviously come for her. So it's sort of, like, in any, like, positive feeling about yeah. religion, joy is an angel. Like, joy is the yes. saint. Joy is someone who, like, can tell something's wrong, but she can't accept it because she's so committed to this idea of redeeming someone else, about mm-hmm. sort of, like, proving herself to God, to follow a path. Yeah, and it's like once you do that, it's like almost, I think it's a comment on like religion innately takes you away from reality.
Yes.
Right, with this kind of religion. Not like spirituality or belief or whatever, but like if you really think that God's knocking photos off the wall to talk to you, how can you live a normal life? How can you yeah. connect with people in reality, you know?
Yeah. And I'll also say, whatever this private staffing agency is, whether they knew or didn't know about her past,
yeah.
perhaps needs a deeper vetting system.
I mean, that's what I was thinking. It was like, are there just not that many people in this area of England?
Right. Where they're like, if she's trained, she's trained.
And if there is a nursing shortage here, so I'm sure it's there as yeah. well. Like, well, I guess, okay, so she may have broken an elderly person's rib cage and killed them, but you yes. know what I mean? Probably won't happen again. And then finally, where would you place Saint Maude on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I feel like this is a 7 for
okay,
me.
Great.
I think in general, religion is very scary. And all of the self-inflicted pain that she goes through is very upsetting. And her little terrible apartment and the cockroach and it's rough. I think, yeah.
Because the other implication also is the cockroach is God.
Right, which I also am not like loving.
I'm not loving it.
I'm not loving it.
Not loving it. I'm going to give it a 7. Yeah. I feel like it's a great movie. I loved it. I thought this was perfect. It's 84 yeah. minutes long. It's a perfect film. I know.
The dream.
Shout out to Rose Glass. We'll absolutely yeah. have to go see Love Lies Bleeding. And yeah, a truly perfect little film.
I love it.
Yeah.
Great for March Madness.
Hell yeah. Thank you for joining us, everybody.
Thank you.
Enjoy Lent, now that we're in Lent, which I also forgot about. Try not to self-flagellate yourself too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do what you got to do, but all right. Until next time, guys, please
keep it spooky.
Don't forget to follow us at Ruined Podcast and Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for show updates. And if you're just as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Ruined is a Radio Point and Crooked Media production. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okolati.